If it's a sports story you're talking about, you can guarantee they'll be talking about it. Unless it's something like Arena Football. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
It's Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Jeff Samba, joined this week by one Mr. Ryan Dixon and Arden Zwelling. Guys, thanks for this. Appreciate your coming in.
Hey, Jeff. We
have a lot of stuff to talk about on the show. Lots of stuff. We'll talk about the NBA playoffs later on this hour. The Toronto Blue Jays. Arden, try to stay with us in that conversation. 11 o'clock.
I might tune out.
You might tune out, huh?
It's not my specialty.
Yeah, you're just going to step aside, go have a half-hour coffee or something. And we'll delve into a few different things in the final half-hour-ish of the show, as Sportsnet Magazine Live is on till noon. We'll look at Deflategate, but briefly, because even just saying the word, it's kind of
it's also not
out.
A word.
It's no, it's thing. Not. Why does everything have to be a gate? Why is that a thing? And we'll talk about the Montreal Canadiens. You know, Ryan, I got to give you props, because earlier on in the year, you had written a piece where the Habs are just tearing it up. And you had written a piece where you're like, they're not that good. I mean, I'm dumbing it down and paraphrasing, obviously. But that's basically what you said.
That was tough for Ryan to do, too, I'm sure.
Soul crushing.
So props to you for that. Now they're, you know, gone out of the Stanley Cup last. We'll talk about the Habs and what they're going to do next, and a little Mike Babcock talk, as well as where he might actually end up. Maybe we'll even find out for sure in the next couple of hours. We won't. But, you know, maybe.
There's deadlines now, right?
There's always that possibility. Yeah.
They set deadlines and they're going to meet them and things.
Right? Yeah, I think he comes back.
He's a guy just like us. It's a regular job.
I think he comes home from overseas like tomorrow or something. So
he's got to put in his 2 weeks.
He's
right?
Got to do his thing. Yeah.
He's got to sort things out with the tax man.
If I ever quit here, it'll be like mid-sentence on the radio. Bye. Gone. That's... I've already dreamed that up like years ago. But we'll talk about, since we'll end the show with some NHL talk. We got to talk about the Stanley Cup playoffs to kick things off. And we'll talk about the Lightning and the Rangers and the obvious storyline, at least going into that series, which begins today, this afternoon, in mere hours, it starts. We're going to have that on the Sportsnet Radio Network as of 12:30, the pregame show at 1 o'clock. Puck drop. You can watch it on the CBC as well. But let's talk about the Anaheim Ducks and Chicago Blackhawks. They get their series started tomorrow. It's a 3 o'clock start, and you can watch that on the CBC tomorrow, game number one. Ducks, Blackhawks, and here we are, guys, in this Western Conference Final. I think these are the two teams, Arden, that we would have expected to be in the Western Conference Final. These are the two teams that should be there.
Doesn't it seem like every year it's the Western Conference Final is the final?
Kind of.
In a way.
Yeah. I think it's probably maybe a little different this year, whereas before I feel like it was a slam dunk.
Yeah.
You know, the years that we got a different version of this, really, with Chicago and L.A., there was certainly a sense that whoever emerged from that series, from that death match, was going to probably go on to win the Stanley Cup. But yes, I do feel like things have changed a little bit now. I have to believe, certainly if Chicago gets through because of their history, they're going to be a tough team to bet against. But hey, there have been people saying all along that the New York Rangers are the Stanley Cup favorites. You know, from Christmas on, they have a deep team, a great goalie. They also have, you know, this is obviously a little more intangible, but I think they have that element that's hard to recreate or conjure up if it doesn't naturally occur. And it's that starving hunger to win it after you've been so close and didn't win it. You know, they were there last year.
Yep.
And they've got a few guys who, I mean, you look at Lundqvist, he's got to be wondering how many more cracks he's got at it. You know, they got a guy like St. Louis who won now more than 10 years ago, who has to know he's going to have limited shots at it. So there's a bit of that element, I mean, for what it's worth, that I think the Rangers have going for them.
And the Rangers went all in, like, this year. Like,
they did go all
in. Like,
absolutely.
Like, we're going for it.
Absolutely. There's no doubt that this is, I mean, especially a year. Last year, I think you could say the Rangers could walk away and say, made the final. We lost to a fantastic team. You know, sucks, but we're going to go ahead and call that a pretty good year. Whereas, obviously, anything less than winning their first Stanley Cup since Mark Messier was around is going to be a huge disappointment at this point.
Yeah. Well, if Tampa beats the Rangers, then I think the Western Conference final determines who's going to win the Stanley Cup. If the Rangers get into the Stanley Cup final, then I think it's going to be a good series. You know, I think it's going to be Rangers-Blackhawks.
Yeah.
That's how I think it's going to end up.
I think it's difficult to bet against Chicago at this point. But having just said what I did about the Rangers, there's a little bit of that going on in Anaheim too, because they haven't had, it's been so long since this core of guys of which there's really only Getzlaff and Perry left from that 07 team. This team could not get out of the first round or second round to save its life the past few years. They've had some good Ducks teams, but just haven't been able to break through. So now that they have gone through Bruce Boudreau, obviously for the first time in his career, he kind of shook that monkey off his back a little bit. He's in the conference final for the first time. I wonder now if they feel like they're really rolling. This is essentially the same thing we've seen before with LA Chicago. It's just a different California team. You've got the big, strong, skilled, but big, strong team in Anaheim against the absurdly fast, talented Blackhawks team. And I mean, we all know what happened last year with a game 7 overtime thriller between LA and Chicago. You know, maybe that's too much to ask for again, but something along those lines, I think, is what we could realistically hope for.
Well, you know, guys, I think game 1 can be very telling as far as what the Blackhawks are going to do going up against the Anaheim Ducks, who are more than Getzlaff and Perry. I know you were talking about history and looking back at that last team that won the Stanley Cup championship a few years ago, back in 2000. That was a long time ago. It doesn't feel like that long.
Start adding up the years.
Yeah,
then quickly stop doing it.
Yeah, no kidding. My goodness. But I think we look at this game 1 and we see the Ducks, they can boast a couple of lines. Like if you're going to focus all your defensive intensity on Getzlaff and Perry, then you're forgetting about Kessler. You're forgetting about that line. And it's going to be interesting to see how the Blackhawks are going to play like a Duncan Keith. Like what are they going to do with their best defenseman and who they're going to match up that defenseman against, you know?
Well, Duncan Keith is going to draw Getzlaff and Perry, no doubt. But you're right. I mean, I think we all thought last summer when Anaheim went out and got Kessler, it was just such a natural fit. They clearly needed another center in that number 2 spot. You couldn't have dreamed up a better scenario for a guy who's probably not, at this point, a real number 1, but he's a deadly number 2. And yes, that depth has filtered down. The Bolesky's and Silverbergs, you absolutely are going to get whacked if all you're focusing on is Getzlaff and Perry. So, yeah, I mean, I can't imagine a scenario where it's not Duncan Keith who's thrown at those guys. But, yes, a big key will certainly be what kind of secondary scoring Anaheim gets from his guys who are not facing Chicago's best defense pair.
I will admit, though, like, I picked the Chicago Blackhawks in part because they've got history, they've got character. I seem to gravitate towards teams, Arden, that have that history, that have that character, that pedigree that you just can't count out. So maybe it's going more with a safe pick. I don't know. But I tend to gravitate towards teams like that.
Well, then you'd want Chicago Rangers, wouldn't you?
That's what I'm thinking is going to happen. And bank it. That's what's going to happen.
It basically is going to happen, Arden, is what you're saying.
When have you ever known me to be wrong about something?
Never.
Exactly.
Not once, especially not when it comes to Blue Jays baseball.
I tell you. Bang on to take it to the bank. Don't even have to watch the games. We'll watch the games on Sportsnet. Don't even have to.
The one thing I will say about this whole thing, and I went and I covered the Stanley Cup last year, because I, like, our bosses at the magazine made a massive mistake and sent me to go do it.
Well,
and,
why would they make, they're not making a massive mistake by sending you anywhere.
I guess not.
I mean, if they got rid of you, then that would be a massive mistake.
Yeah.
They sent you packing.
It's debatable. It's debatable. Depends on your perspective.
So the Stanley Cup finals, you were there last year?
Yeah, and the thing that left the biggest impression on me is how beat up guys are at this time of year and how hard this thing is, right? Like, you're going through an 82-game season, and then, like, the playoffs are a whole nother season. And when you're talking about a team like the New York Rangers, who last year went all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals. I mean, you're talking about a team that's played a lot of hockey over the last two years. True. You look at how the LA Kings this year ran out of steam because and a lot of guys are just saying, yo, we're just tired. These long playoff runs, it's tiring. It's so hard on the body. And when you look at it right now, the Western Conference teams have had an easier road in this playoffs.
Which no one would have ever thought they'd be saying, but yeah, it's true. Yeah.
You okay, look at it. So it's going to be Anaheim-Tampa. Great. Well, I'm completely wrong.
What I'm saying is, you know, Anaheim's played 9 games to this point. Chicago's played 10. I mean, the Rangers and Tampa have played more games than that. And it's just been harder for them to get here. And I think the people kind of undervalue how much of a an effect the physicality of this has, and just the weariness and fatigue, and who has fresh legs. I mean, it's hard to get going at this time of year, and playing through injuries, things like that. That's a really big factor,
especially the way the Rangers play too, because they I forget what the number they're up to now, but it's like literally their last 15 games I think in the playoffs are one goal games.
Oh, yeah,
right?
Yeah,
like there's no we put it in Park in the third period and just cruised on our, you know, with our 6-2 lead.
Yeah.
Like,
wait a game off.
Yeah,
there,
it is life and death. Scratch it out every single time for every single win or loss. So that's true. That takes even more of a toll than even above and beyond what Arden mentioned, that New York was obviously in the final last year.
That's Ryan Dixon with Arden Zwelling. I'm Jeff Samet at Sportsnet Magazine live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Okay, so let's focus in a little bit more on the Lightning and the Rangers. And the obvious storyline, guys, going in is Callahan and St. Louis playing against their former teams, ex-captains of their former teams. Ryan, is there too much being made of this storyline? Obviously, it's something that we want to talk about. They totally downplayed it and said, yeah, that's something that you guys are going to enjoy, but really we don't put that much stock into it. What about those two guys, though?
So I think yes and no. No in the sense that once the puck drops, I don't think, you know, the fact that Ryan Callahan used to play for the Rangers or St. Louis used to play for the Lightning has a huge impact. But come on, there's no way that Ryan Callahan or Strahlman or Brian Boyle, all the guys who played on the Rangers last year, and Marty St. Louis, who actively, you know, asked to get out of Tampa. You have to know that the one team those guys would not want to lose to is the team they used to play for. I mean, give me a break.
Sure.
So, I mean, is it actually going to have an impact on the series, the fact that those guys used to play for those teams? I don't think so. But yeah, of course, we're going to spend a lot of time talking about it. It does make it, you know, it makes things a little juicier. But during it won't be till after the series when those guys have a private moment and whichever one comes out on the losing end is like, are you kidding me? How did I lose to those guys?
I will bet anything that there will be a camera dedicated to the handshake where St. Louis and Callahan shake hands there. Looking at this, though, from a Martin St. Louis standpoint, Arden, you look at St. Louis, and Ryan mentioned it, him orchestrating his way out of Tampa. Well, he gets benched in the third period in Game 7 against Washington. So things don't seem to be going well with him, and he hasn't scored in a ton. So things don't seem to be going well with him in New York. There could be two places that we look at with Martin St. Louis where he's like, okay, well, by the end of it, he wore out his welcome. He didn't want to be there anymore.
It's a 40-year-old man we're talking about right now.
Grumpy old man.
He's got grumpy down a little bit, doesn't he? Yeah.
I mean, playing in a young man's league, playing this late into the season, 40 years old, right? Like, I can understand if his legs are a little weary at this point, or if the Rangers want to not overuse him. You know, I don't think that he's going to be a 20-minute-a-night guy at this point in his career. He's just, there's so much mileage on that body.
Yeah.
You know, looking at the Rangers, balance really is their thing too, though. So, I mean, old, young, whatever, they need everyone pulling on the rope a bit. I mean, Nash hadn't scored until late in
And St. Louis hasn't scored in the playoffs.
St. Louis hasn't scored in the playoffs. Their leading goal scorer is Derek Brassard and Derek Stepan. They've each got 8 points in 12 games. You know, it's not like they don't have a Patty Kane or a Steven Stamkos / Tyler Johnson or a Getzlaf Perry who, again, this is why we're talking about them grinding games out. There's no one who says, jump on my back, boys. Here's my 3 goals tonight, and let's go grab a cold one after the game. You know, they just don't have that player.
Shouldn't Rick Nash be
He should be. And he wasn't last year when he kind of had the excuse of coming off of dealing with some injuries. And yeah, I mean, this is.
But Nash just played well. Like he scored that goal in game six, and it was, he had admitted it was kind of like a monkey off his back.
Sure.
Like, okay. I scored, right? Everyone happy? All right, there you go. We got a goal. And he's played well.
And he could be that guy. Let's be fair, that it wouldn't shock you if at the end of the Eastern Conference final, Rick Nash had 5 goals in 6 games or something like that. But it hasn't happened yet. So, that would be an enormous boon for the Rangers if he could get hot.
Well, I think with Nash, though, like he had a few shots on goal in Game 7 against Washington, but he had one breakaway. But it was long range shots, like they were from far away. So you kind of look at that stat and say, well, you know, he had like 5 shots on goal or something like that in game seven. But a lot of them were from a distance. So the Rangers have to find a way for him to actually get a little bit closer to that and try to create some more opportunity around the net. Bishop versus Lundqvist. And, you know, guys, in previewing the playoffs and talking about, okay, who's going to be the best team out of the East? Who's going to come out of the Eastern Conference in the Stanley Cup Finals? And everybody would talk about Montreal, the Rangers, and Tampa in no particular order, but, you know, and understandably so, the 3 best teams in the Eastern Conference. And they'd say, well, Montreal's got Carey Price. I mean, look, Carey Price is having an unbelievable year. This is the best we've ever seen him. He's going to win the Hart, maybe the Vezina. Well, he's going to win the Vezina. So you're like, okay, great. And then Henrik Lundqvist, well, he's going to get healthy and he's going to be fine. He's going to be King Henry all over again. It's, you know, that's a lock. Ben Bishop, well, we'll see. You know, if he's as good as he needs to be, all right. Well, here we see Ben Bishop beating Carey Price, and now we see Ben Bishop taking on Henrik Lundqvist. So this is a great storyline, getting to see Bishop try to slay that dragon and Henrik Lundqvist. Who would have thought, in talking about that trio of goaltenders, that, you know, Bishop would have gone up against two of them, that maybe we will see Ben Bishop slaying both of those two guys and ending up in the Stanley Cup Finals.
It's playoffs. You get hot. I mean, you just ride that streak, right? If you're a guy like Ben Bishop, who's been, I mean, him and Lundqvist have probably been the 2 best goalies in this postseason now that Braden Holtby's out of it, right?
Yeah, that Holtby's out of it, yeah. Because I was going to say Holtby would be the guy there.
Right, but he's not around anymore.
Yeah.
So he doesn't even matter.
That's right. Well, yeah, I think Bishop's
over.
I think Bishop has been as good as he needs to be. His career's over. Yeah, he's done. You know what? That would be something. Huh? You know what? Good enough for me, guys. That's it. I'm out of here.
Are you undervaluing Bishop right now? I think he's been great.
I think he's been as good as he needs to be.
He's been great. He's probably...
There's a couple of games where he stopped a ton of shots.
931 save percentage, 1.81 goals against average. Those are rather good numbers.
I think I think he's won them games.
Yeah,
and you have to do that in the playoffs. Sure.
He's had some baubles, but yes, absolutely, he's been there when they need him. And I think most people will tell you they probably don't get out of Game 7 against Detroit if Bishop doesn't play as well as he does. And you know, to be fair, Detroit probably should have buried on a couple early, but that pulled them through. And then he goes against the guy who's going to win. Like you said, could be the MVP of the league, and he gets a leg up on Price. So, yeah, you forget that last year, you know, Tampa was, the playoffs ended before they really began, and that was because they had no goaltending, because Bishop busted up his elbow in a freak fall against the Leafs a week before. So, I mean, we're just seeing what Tampa could have done last year had they had this guy when he was really good in the regular season.
It's true. Like Bishop last year, I mean, he finished 3rd in Vezina voting. I mean, he's not exactly an under the radar guy.
That's right.
Yeah,
it's been a slow build for him for sure up through the minors. How crazy would Ottawa as a side be? How crowded would their crease be if they still had Ben Bishop now that they've signed the college kid? They've got Anderson, they've got Leonard,
maybe they don't go out and get O'Connor if they still had Bishop. And and then we don't see the burglar later on.
And we might not see him again.
We'll see him somewhere. I don't know for how long, but we'll
actually
see him
working at Burger King. This is where we might see him.
Really?
Like, legitimately working there.
Come on.
serving us our Whoppers.
As far as the NHL goes from a marketing standpoint, looking at last year, looking at this year, and the teams that remain, Ryan, I think they've done quite well for themselves.
Well, and even go back a decade to, as we talk about, or we're on the verge of another generational player, Connor McDavid getting drafted 1st overall.
I'm sorry, who? You know what? Keep talking.
McDavid,
I'm going to Google him.
Sidney Crosby goes to the Pittsburgh Penguins, a team that was in, you know, needed a savior again, and they got a savior. Totally revitalized that club, which was really, you know, okay, Pittsburgh's not an original six team, but they're a second-tier classic club, if you will. So, I mean, that was big for the league. They've had Detroit all along playing well, winning cups. Chicago completely revitalized in the last little while. Even the Boston Bruins winning a Stanley Cup. Big, big, big U.S. markets, original six teams, just great for the league. And then, yeah, you go right up to last year with the Rangers in L.A. I mean, the East Coast, West Coast, you two biggest markets in the United States, you almost can't draw it up better. And yeah, here we are again, where you could have a Chicago, New York, pretty classic. Or, you know, maybe you get Tampa, Anaheim, and you reinvigorate two markets that do okay. Non-traditional markets, they have entrenched themselves, established themselves with Stanley Cups, but are now a good distance from them. You create maybe a new generation of fans by going with a trip to the final again. So I think whatever shakes out for the Stanley Cup final, I think the league is pretty happy.
Well, Arden, you've spent a ton of time in Tampa covering the Toronto Blue Jays in spring training. Have you ever had the opportunity to go to a Lightning game? I would think not, given how busy you would be, but
no,
have you ever
had that opportunity? It hasn't been on the itinerary.
No, if you ever do get the opportunity, and I wasn't expecting that you would have, given how busy you would be down to spring training, but if you ever get the opportunity, it's a really neat experience, speaking as a Canadian and someone that's been here in Toronto forever, that you can go to an NHL game and leave, and you've gone in shorts and a t-shirt and you leave the rink and it's boiling hot outside. It's just, there really is something to that. And I love
it. Always
that.
Makes you feel like you're on a deep playoff run because it's warm outside.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's that magical feeling.
Are the Leafs playing in June? Yeah. Never. Not happening. Well, Lightning and Rangers, they kick off this round of the Stanley Cup playoffs, the Eastern Conference Final and the Western Conference Final before it's all said and done in the Stanley Cup Finals, and we find out who the winner of the Stanley Cup is going to be this year. But Tampa Bay Lightning and the Rangers will have it for you on the Sportsnet Radio Network, kicking off with the pregame show at 12:30, and of course you can watch the game on the CBC. Puck drop is at 1 o'clock, and as we continue this hour on Sportsnet Magazine Live, going to have a look at the NBA playoffs as LeBron and the Cavs move on and what this might mean for LeBron. Like, if he were to win a championship, what would it mean for his future in Cleveland? We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the winners and losers in the NBA playoffs in the latest round as we continue Sportsnet Magazine Live with Ryan Dixon and Arden Zwelling. I'm Jeff Sammet. It's the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Fans know that Sportsnet.ca has them covered with news, analysis, highlights, and storytelling. But the lineup also includes podcasts. Here's a taste of Free Association, a Raptors and NBA podcast.
I am Dave Zarum.
And I'm JD Bunkus.
And we are the hosts of Free Association, Sportsnet's weekly NBA and Raptors podcast, in which we have freewheeling discussion on everything relating to the National Basketball Association. Thrilled to be joined by our guest, Masai Ujiri.
One of the league's best enforcers, friend of the show now, Charles Oakley.
On the phone right now, we got Alvin Boogie Williams, Milt Newton, former NCAA champion and the general manager of the Minnesota Timberwolves.
A crack-smoking womanizer who doesn't pay his taxes. That's what's perfect for DC.
And I'd say it's worth every penny if he's going to keep giving entertainment like that.
I'm not with you on that one. You're my boy, but I'm not with you on that one.
All right.
From the first
game. It's obviously not overblown because we're talking about it now. We only talk about the most relevant stories. So, like I said, a lot of stuff.
Go to Sportsnet.ca and click on the Podcast Central logo for the scoop on Free Association and all our shows, as well as links to listen and subscribe.
It's 10:39 on Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. In for Ben Ennis, I'm Jeff Sammet with Ryan Dixon and Arden Zwelling. This week, we'll talk Toronto Blue Jays at 11 o'clock. Boy, they took it on the chin last night against the Houston Astros. Can't believe there's a day and age in which I'm saying that, but that did in fact happen. R.A. Dickey was not good. That's a little bit more believable. That I know I've said in the past. We'll talk about that at 11 o'clock. We look at the NBA playoffs right now. And guys, let's start with LeBron James. And I don't think it's to anyone's surprise that the Cleveland Cavaliers are in the Eastern Conference Finals. That's a thing we all expected, right? We expected LeBron James to be there. Even when early on in the year, when the Cavs weren't the Cavs yet, we expected them to come around. We expected them to be there in the end. I know I did.
Yeah, you know what? It was a bit of a strange stew there early on. The pieces didn't quite sync up the way certainly the Cavs hoped. But you're right. It was tough to bet against LeBron. In some ways, it's maybe ridiculous to say this of a about a player of Kevin Love's caliber, but it almost simplified things for them now. So it's like, all right, it's get it to LeBron time. And they obviously Kyrie as well. But in some ways, you wonder if it was just easier to say, let's stop trying to be inclusive or let's stop trying to accommodate these three parties and just say, all right, here's our guy, you know, put it on his shoulders and let's see where we get.
Except for the one game, the LeBron buzzer beater from, I guess, about a week ago where Coach Blatt decided, you know what, the play I'm going to draw up in which we need to win the game, we're going to have LeBron inbound.
And if you have any self-preservation instincts as a coach, how do you not make every play when LeBron James is on your team, get it to LeBron and see what happens? Because you've covered your butt at that point, right?
Well,
like, no one can say anything.
I got the best player in the world. Yeah. I'm not going to put it in his hands.
Exactly. There's only one way you can put yourself on the firing line, and that's by doing things like getting LeBron to inbound the pass.
Yeah, we're going to do something a little different. LeBron, get me some water. Yeah. The other five guys are going to get this done here. Let me ask this, Arden. I was thinking about this. And I can't believe it's only year one that he's back in Cleveland, because it feels like it's like 3 years, but it's that long a year. But anyway, so he's back in Cleveland. He comes back and you say, all right, well, he's coming back to win a championship in Cleveland. Now, maybe it'll take a couple of years. Surely we cannot predict that in the first year he's going to go in and just win a championship in Cleveland. Let's see what kind of team they're going to build around him and everything. Well, here we face that opportunity where LeBron can, in fact, win a championship in Cleveland. He's gotten this far. Who's to say, you know, he won't? So that being the case, if he's checking that off his to-do list, he's won a championship in Cleveland, would you say that maybe he says, hey, you know what, I'm going to go to L.A. I'm going to go play with the Lakers. I'm going to get a lot of money. I'm going to go and try something different, because what else do you want me to do here in Cleveland? We won a championship. Do you think that could happen?
It's going to say, you know, those guys in Toronto are really building something. I think I'm going to go there. I'm pretty sure that's exactly what he's going to say.
Now you're starting a whole new thing. Now you're starting a whole new thing, and I like that a lot better.
No, I think he's going to finish his career in Cleveland, to be honest with you. I think that's what makes the most harmonious sense, probably to him and to everybody else involved, if they'll have him. I mean, it's where he's from.
What made the most harmonious sense before he went to Miami? Him sticking around in Cleveland, no?
No, because Cleveland wasn't winning championships at the time, and Miami was going to win some championships. Yeah, so he got his rings.
Don't you think if LeBron stuck around, that they would have won a championship?
I don't know.
Hard to say.
It's hard to say. Yeah, it's hard to play kind of revisionist history with it. But, like, I'd think that, I don't know, I think he made the right call. He went and won some championships.
Oh, he did. Yeah. No, he went there. He did. And look, this is a guy that, you know, talked about, has been in Cleveland forever. He's an Ohio guy forever.
Yeah.
So maybe this was his college years. You know, those were his college years. Where I'm going to go somewhere else. And I'm going to go to Miami. I'm going to play in Miami. I've never been. I'm going to stay there. I'm going to live there. See how that goes. Then he won a bunch of championships. He goes, all right, well, I'm done. I'm going to go back to Cleveland, and I'm going to try to win a championship there. Now, Ryan, I mean, the flip side to it is, you know, Arden's predicting, he's saying, well, he's going to stick around in Cleveland forever. Maybe he looks at it and says, there's nowhere else where I get as much power and as much say. It's here in Cleveland. And then once I'm done, I'm probably going to end up owning the team. I'll take this whole operation over, and I'll be that guy. Maybe that's what he's has his eyes set on.
Right? Well, I do remember plug here for our coworker Dan Robson. He went to Cleveland, I think Akron, maybe specifically, before the season, and, you know, really just try to get a sense for, like, LeBron's place there and how much it meant to him. And that's his whole world, really, is there. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if he stuck around after his playing days and, you know, whatever role that LeBron wanted to play, he probably could play there. So I tend to maybe naively, because, yes, he did leave once, but I tend to think that this is a long-lasting thing. I don't think you could ever say he thought he made a mistake by going to Miami, because yes, he won those championships and solidified his legacy as an absolute all-time NBA player. But I think now that he has the peace of mind of knowing that he's got those titles no matter what, now he can set about building a different part to his legacy, which is, you know, obviously Cleveland is one of the more hard luck sports towns around North America. I don't know if you've heard much about that, but it's been a little dry there. So if he can bring not one, not two, no, but, you know, a few titles over the next few years, I think nothing would make him happier.
Seeing Paul Pierce with almost another buzzer beater to tie things up against the Hawks yesterday, that did not happen because it was just after the clock had run out. So, you know, maybe the clock's run out on Paul Pierce. He doesn't even know if that's the case yet or not. But the Wizards are done and the Hawks move on. And seeing, you know, some of the teams that are left over, there's some fresh blood in terms of the organizations and the clubs and the teams that are moving on to this point that could potentially win a title run.
Yeah, I think it's great. You know, you've got the Hawks, which I believe Atlanta hasn't been to the conference final since the 70s. Same thing for Golden State. And the Clippers have never been there. So if they can rebound from that absolute choke job they pulled in Game 6, which we'll see, then you've now got three teams, Atlanta, Golden State, in L.A., that essentially haven't been there in L.A.'s case ever. So that's great. That revitalizes some fan bases. And again, Cleveland, you know, yes, they have been there in LeBron Act 1 era. But again, not exactly a town that's accustomed to success and deep playoff runs. So, you know, it's good. I know the NBA is a stars league, and I feel like it's also a signature franchise league to a large degree. It's, you know, driven by the Lakers and the Celtics. And the flip side is, of course, those teams are down. The 76ers are way down. But I think it's good to get a little moment in the sun for these other teams that have been the also-rans for so long.
Golden State Warriors and Arden, we saw Steph Curry. He was outstanding. Outstanding last night in a 108-95 win for the Warriors in Memphis as the Golden State Warriors move on and take care of the Grizzlies. Curry with 32 points, but a big game changer was at the end of the third quarter. That desperation three from, I mean, near his own net, just heaving it up there and nailing that three. Any momentum the Grizzlies had built up was gone at that point, and the Golden State Warriors would end up winning this game. And we talk about stars in this league, and Steph Curry certainly is that. I mean, and then some. He was just dynamite yesterday.
Yeah, he's insane. I mean, all you need to do is just kind of sit at home on the internet and just Steph Curry vines and gifs will just flow through to you. And, you know, not even just like crazy shots, but like clips of him just cutting and like making guys fall over all over themselves and, you know, just hitting circus, like just doing ridiculous things. It's crazy.
It's fun too. I find that, and if you're the NBA, you know, power brokers, not only do you have a new star, you have a different kind of star. So obviously Curry was the league MVP this year. And, you know, the way he does things is different. And I'm getting a little tired of this whole narrative of, you know, Michael Jordan or Kobe Bryant or probably even LeBron. They're just maniacal. They, you know, to the exclusion of all other emotion, all they feel is the desire to win. Well, I'm sure Steph Curry wants to win as bad as they do, but I love that he looks like he's having a little fun out there and that being in the NBA and winning the MVP and maybe going to the NBA Finals is awesome and fun. And, you know, he plays a different game than the Warriors play a different game than sort of the typical template. So I think it's great that we've got something different in terms of style and technique to latch onto.
If you look at that draft that he came out of, that 09 draft, first overall selection, Blake Griffin, and then James Harden went number 3, and then Steph Curry at number 7. Those
not
are
a
three,
bad draft.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, three guys who are really fun to watch. Three guys who bring a really different brand of basketball, as Dixon was saying.
Very, very different,
Three guys who I love. Like, I love watching James Harden. Like, he's so much, like, he's such a curmudgeon, and it's, like, great. And you love watching Blake Griffin just be like a freak of nature.
Yeah.
And then Steph Curry, who seems to be on another level in terms of speed and agility.
Yeah. The highlight reels both for two different reasons.
Let's put them together.
And Curry. Yeah.
Hey, let's start a little dynasty there.
Saw a couple of future Raptors joining LeBron James here in Toronto. So we look forward to that inevitability, clearly.
That's how it works,
14 years ago, Vince Carter had played with Del Curry here in Toronto and gets eliminated by Steph Curry yesterday as a member of the Memphis Grizzlies and losing to the Golden State Warriors. And I don't know about you guys, but I've had a lot of people on Twitter in talking about Vince Carter with me saying, good, I don't want Vince Carter winning a championship anyway. I go, really? We still doing this? We still there?
Time to let it go, isn't
it? Isn't it time to let it go? I mean, honestly.
Cuts run deep.
I want the Warriors to be there in the end, just from an entertainment standpoint. If they win it or not, fine. But I want them to go to the NBA Finals and play seven games. Win or lose, I want them there. That's how I want things to play out. But if they lost to the Grizzlies, I thought, okay, well, I'm going to be rooting for Vince Carter because I like this new inception of Vince Carter and this role that he's got, this grizzled vet at the end of his career. I like that role. And he accepts that role, and he's thriving on it, and he loves it. He's got two more years left with the Memphis Grizzlies in his deal. But a part of me was kind of rooting for Vince Carter to kind of move on and see that storyline play out. But I'm in the minority here in Toronto, that's for sure.
He's had, like, the strangest career. Because if you remember when he was in Toronto, I mean, this was, like, next, you know, this was, like, LeBron levels of, like, incredible dominance, like, absolutely taking over the league. And then somewhere along the line, he became, like, this journeyman, like, kind of veteran dude.
And has embraced it seems like, right? Yeah.
Totally. But he's played for, like, 20 teams in the last 4 years. And he's just, like,
yeah, you know, like, he's bounced around a lot.
He won't go away. He's, like, 38 years old. And he's still, like, productive. And he's, like, a bench player now. It's kind of, it's funny to see how things changed, like, very quickly for him from a career that seemed to be ascending to, you know, pretty superstar heights.
Paul Pierce and Vince Carter both accepting those roles as veterans on younger teams that, you know, try to take the team over the top in that way, and both eliminated from the NBA playoffs. Ah, it's a shame to see. They were both a couple of good storylines, but certainly plenty left in the NBA playoffs. We'll continue Sportsnet Magazine Live. We'll turn our focus to the Toronto Blue Jays. Not going well these days, and R.A. Dickey certainly didn't help yesterday. We'll talk about that as we continue this hour with Ryan Dixon and Arden Zwelling. Actually, as we kick off the 11 o'clock hour, I'm Jeff Sambit, Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
The top topics, the headiest headlines, the debatiest debate. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Dickey's pitch slam to right center field. Long, high drive. Kevin Pillar sprinting to the track, to the wall. That ball is gone. Number 6 for George Springer. Astros 4, Blue Jays 1.
And Blue Jays lost to the Astros yesterday, 8-4 at Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Jeff Sambit, the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm in for Ben Ennis this week. Ryan Dixon and Arden Zwelling on the show this week. And you know what, guys? The Blue Jays have lost 3 in a row. The last couple in Houston as the 4-game series continues. And it's a 7-10 first pitch here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. You can watch it on Sportsnet tonight as well. As the Blue Jays can do nothing better than split this series. And you know, they got to win tonight for that to be a possibility. But of late, the Blue Jays struggles, and the offense is no problem. Runs per game, they're like second overall in Major League Baseball. So the runs, they can score, but it's the pitching, Arden Zwelling, that's especially the starting pitching that's been a problem. But, you know, I mean, a couple nights ago, Hutchinson was all right, but Aaron Loop came in and blew the whole thing. So it's like the bullpen wasn't going that night. But the starting pitching seems to be the main focus of the Toronto Blue Jays in terms of their struggles.
The starting pitching has to be dramatically better if this team's going somewhere. It's gotten to that point where that's where it is. You can't just get a little bit better. Like, it's got to be dramatically better. And you would assume that it would be when you look at track records of R.A. Dickey and Mark Burley, and you look at, you know, the potential that Drew Hutchison has and Aaron Sanchez and Daniel Norris. But I mean, it's so far. I mean, the starting pitching has been as bad as can be. And as you alluded to, I mean, on nights when they do get a good start, I mean, some other part of the team isn't firing. You know, it's almost been like the most unfortunate confluence of events on any given night is that, you know, you get a good start and the bats aren't hitting, or the bullpen isn't working, or, you know, you don't get a good start and, you know, when the bats are hitting. I mean, it's they can't get everything firing at once.
Yeah, and specifically looking at R.A. Dickey, you know, he was just saying there's too much rotation on the ball yesterday. And you know, it's almost like as a knuckleballer, you kind of talk about it like a bit of an out-of-body experience. That this is a thing that happened to me, as opposed to, no, well, you did that. It's a little bit different when talking about the knuckleball. But so far in 76 games with the Toronto Blue Jays, he's given up 70 home runs. That's R.A. Dickey for you. What do you describe R.A. Dickey as? What's your description of an R.A. Dickey? Because when he first came here to the Toronto Blue Jays, was coming off a Cy Young year, And I didn't think he was going to repeat that, what he did with the New York Mets. But I thought, all right, well, a top-of-the-rotation guy, that's what you expect out of R.A. Dickey. Well, here we are, 76 games later for R.A. Dickey with the Toronto Blue Jays. What do you describe R.A. Dickey as?
I mean, expectations are so out of whack for him coming in because of the Cy Young year. I mean, that's the worst thing that could have possibly happened for Toronto Blue Jays fan expectations. And also because of the prospects that were given up for him. I think he's been what he is. You know what I mean? Who's the guy who's going to give you a ton of innings. He's going to give up some runs, give up some home runs, but he's going to give you a chance to win, you know, more times than not. And at $12 million a year, the value he's provided has been absolutely adequate. But it's hard to, I think fans have a hard time seeing that when they look at what was given up for him and they look at what he did with the Mets. Now, the R.A. Dickey of his last five starts is a different R.A. Dickey than we've seen. Like, this is an atrocious R.A. Dickey. This is a guy, like you said, who has a mechanical issue with his knuckleball. It's spinning too much. I mean, he's talking about going to talk to Charlie Huff, who is an old knuckleballer from back in the day and one of R.A. Dickey's mentors. This guy, he's like the Yoda of the knuckleball, kind of. And Dickey's talking about going and talking to him for some ideas because he releases it right now and it's not coming in. That hard, high knuckleball that he has so much success with, it's rotating and it's just spinning and sitting in the top of the zone. And you look at the one that Jose Altuve hit last night. I mean, that just smoked. And I mean, I don't know, you or I could hit that one out. I mean, it wasn't a tough pitch.
Well, definitely you. Definitely you could. I'm more of that middle infielder guy, that slap hitter that's going to hit ninth. That's my MO. That's how I am on the field. It's gone that bad, huh, for R.A. Dickey, that he's actually seeking advice for Charlie Huff. Well, I don't know. I mean, I would think that a knuckleballer, it's a tight-knit group that they would talk every once in a while. So that's a good thing. You know, in talking about this Blue Jays team right now, Ryan, and we see them at 17 and 20, there's a real importance on this year for them to do well, because with an outgoing president in Paul Beeston, with the uncertainty of Alex Anthopoulos' future, and in turn John Gibbons' future, or maybe even more so, that, and I've talked about this with Arden throughout the year and especially before it, that going into this year and the importance of this year, the next president that comes in, his biggest worry could be, we got to get an all-star game here. We got to get this turf thing straightened out. Or it could be, I need a GM. I need a manager. This is a very big year for the Toronto Blue Jays. And right now in May, 17 and 20.
Well, and I think the most significantly, they're in such a winnable division. And after years and years of being buried under the heavyweights, you know, they're not in a division with Detroit or the LA Angels. There is essentially, you know, a handful of C-minus to B-plus teams in their division. And it's there. If they can just get it together a bit, it's there for the taking. And, you know, it doesn't seem like they're in a position to seize it. I mean, who knows? They obviously got off to such a fantastic start last year and it came crashing down. You know, maybe they'll just kind of scuffle for a bit and then have a better second half. But yeah, I mean, when you look at the pieces, you know, they got such a murderous top half to the lineup. You know, like you said, if the pitching could just come around, then you would think things could kind of take form, and there you can see the path to, even at 17 and 20, you know, you're only four games back. Like, you can see the path to winning this division and really playing any kind of playoff. Even if they got to the playoffs and got smacked around, it would be such a victory after, you know, two decades outside the playoffs. But so far, there's not a lot of reason to believe that they can be the one out of the five mostly average teams to win the East.
Well, they've scored more runs than anybody. And isn't it funny, Arden, baseball is this game. They scored 193 runs. I mean, second best in the American League East are the first place New York Yankees with 166. And you look at the Red Sox, who are a half game better than the Toronto Blue Jays. And the Blue Jays have a run differential of plus 13 as opposed to the Red Sox at minus 30. It really is I love looking at some of those categories and going, why is that team better than that team in the standings? When you look at some of those categories, and say, well, clearly they're being blown away.
Well, especially with the Jays, there's been such a discrepancy in when they've scored their runs. I mean, they've had a lot of games where they've had 9-10 runs, like an absurd amount. And then they've had games where they've had, you know, one or two, and they can't get anything started.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, they've made Miguel Gonzalez look like Cy Young, you know, a couple times, right? Like, so you can look at it just purely that the Jays have scored more runs than anybody in baseball, 193.
Yeah.
But those runs have come at different times. So it's not exactly a consistent offense. It's not like every night you go out there, you can count on 5 or 6, which would be better than, you know, one night you get 10 and the next you get 1.
With the Blue Jays in fourth place right now, and they're 4 games back, as are the Baltimore Orioles, but the Blue Jays have a couple of more wins. The Red Sox are in third, 3.5 out. Tampa 1 out of the New York Yankees, who are in first place with 21 wins. I mean, it's still early in the year. I know people hate hearing that, but it is still early in the year. And 4 games is not a big lead, but there are some teams to jump over. Should the Blue Jays find themselves in a position where they're still in fourth place, where it's starting to get a little bit desperate, where a move needs to be made? Is John Gibbons in danger at all, or is he the man for Alex Anthopoulos no matter what?
I don't think he's in danger. I don't think he should be in danger. I don't think he's done anything wrong, to be honest with you. I just don't get those. The people who just want people fired, like, I just don't get it. It's not going to help.
It would just be the next domino if a team is struggling, because the GM's not going to fire himself. So if there's going to be one swift move, fairly or unfairly, it's commonly the coach or the manager. And I'm on the unfair side of things as well, as in terms of John Gibbons.
Yeah, but why? Why? Well, why? Like, nobody.
It's not going to make any difference.
Reason.
It's not going to make a difference.
Who makes
the starting pitcher going to be better with a different manager? I don't think it is.
Anybody who makes the case for firing John Gibbons, firing Alex Anthopoulos, you ask why. I say, oh, well, the results haven't been there. And it's like, okay, well, what's your next step? Who are you bringing in? And what is that person going to do differently or better to make this team win more? You know what I mean? Like, you want to talk about John Gibbons, you're going to bring in an entirely new voice. You're going to bring in somebody who's probably going to manage the bullpen in exactly the same way John Gibbons has, because John Gibbons manages his bullpen very well. Someone who's going to manage the lineup and the handedness of hitters in the lineup exactly the same way. So the only thing that he'll do differently is interact with his players differently. And I mean, John Gibbons has built up relationships with these players over the last 3 years, understands them, understands their needs, their egos, you know, how they're going to react to certain moves, how they're going to be. A new guy that you bring in the middle of the season doesn't know any of these guys. And so there's going to be such growing pains there just in terms of getting over how you manage this team, especially a team that has such discrepancy in age. When you look at, like, the most veteran of veterans in Dickey and Burley, and then the most rookie of rookies in, like, Devin Travis, Aaron Sanchez, Daniel Norris when he comes back. So a new voice, he's not going to walk in and just seamlessly understand how to manage this clubhouse. Why wouldn't you go with the guy who understands the personalities in there and the egos and how to get the best out of these players?
I totally agree. We're still in that mode, though, not just with the Blue Jays, but around Major League Baseball, of getting to know your team, right? Like, if we're looking for a deal that's going to be made, it's not going to be made right now.
No, it's not. And like you said, people don't like to hear that it's early. I got a new thing. I say there's a lot of time left.
Ah!
People seem to react to that.
We'll say it over and over and over again. People
better.
Start hating it. Yeah.
There's a lot of time left. Because people don't like hearing it's early for some reason.
It
triggers a thing.
A year or so ago, it was just like, I've heard that too. And everybody that had said it at the time was correct in saying it. But yeah, people got sick of that.
There's
still plenty of time left.
There's so much time. There's over 100 games left, 120, something like that. Like, that's so many games. And I don't understand how fans just immediately forget, like, the runs that teams like Oakland have gone on recently, runs that teams like Tampa Bay have gone on. Like, this stuff happened in, like, very, very recent years. And these are runs that didn't start until September. So you can't, I mean, at this point, like, I haven't even looked at the standings. Why would you? What's the point? I mean, it's not early.
There's so much time left. You know, talking about Jose Bautista, and with Orton Zwelling and Ryan Dixon, I'm Jeff Sam at Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Looking at this from a Blue Jays perspective and seeing Jose Reyes get hurt, come back, and then gone again. Seeing Michael Saunders hurt, come back earlier than a lot of people would have thought. And then he's out again, and he's going to be out for 4 to 6 weeks in resting his knee. And seeing Jose Bautista DHing right now, and look, it's he's hitting. It's fine. He's hitting at times, so he can do that, but he obviously can't play the outfield. He can't throw. Ryan, do you blame fans or people out there that see what's happened with Reyes and Saunders this year and say, well, maybe the Blue Jays are handling this Jose Bautista injury all wrong?
Yeah, I don't know about that. I mean, each case is sort of a unique one unto itself, I would say. I mean, Reyes has obviously had such a pretty well-established history of being nicked up, right? It's sort of more exceptional at this point when he is playing than when he isn't. And Saunders, that was the freak injury too, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, I think, I call me naive, but I assume every team does what it can to keep its eye on the big picture and say, what's the best long-term approach to get this guy back to 100% as fast as possible, but, you know, without compromising his health when we do bring him back.
Looking at Bautista in having to be the DH, Arden, it really does limit the Blue Jays and their possibilities, especially when they could have Edwin Encarnacion DHing a ton and Justin Smoke over at first base. This is a Blue Jays team early on in the year and in spring training that was priding themselves on the defense, that we saw with the Baltimore Orioles that made a big difference last year, and it's been a big difference this year in a bad way for the Baltimore Orioles. Blue Jays have a little less of that flexibility and getting to put Justin Smoke over there at first base, DH and get rid of Encarnacion.
I buy the Encarnacion argument, and especially when they're at home, and that you don't want a guy with the history back issues, history leg issues, like playing every day on turf. You want to get him off his feet when you can. I can't, so like that I buy, but Edwin Encarnacion, we've asked him about it and says, hey, I prepare my body to play every day. I'm fine with it. I feel good. He's being productive. He's making great plays, rangy plays at first base. He's looking fine. The Justin Smoke argument, I don't get. Like, the people who say, like, this is a travesty that Jose Bautista is hitting DH every day because Justin Smoke isn't in the lineup. You're really that concerned about your bench bat? Like, if Justin Smoke is the biggest victim of this, life's okay. Like, you're going to be fine. Wouldn't you much rather have Jose Bautista's bat in the lineup? Since he's been DH, he's got a 928 OPS. Couple homers, six doubles, a triple. I mean, he's producing with the bat. He's doing what you want him to be doing. Wouldn't you rather have that than like, oh, like Justin Smoke needs some playing time?
No,
that's
no,
a bench bat.
No, you're absolutely right. I don't think the argument is, so we're not seeing enough of Justin Smoke, Jose Bautista can't be in there. It's not that. It's, isn't it a shame that Jose Bautista isn't healthy and in the field so Encarnacion can be a DH and Justin Smoke can improve the defense on the field? That's the way they're looking at it. That's the way a lot of people are looking at it. It's a shame that that isn't the case.
It's better if this team is better if Jose Bautista is fully healthy. Absolutely.
And he gets his defense as well in the outfield.
Yeah, he gets his defense in the outfield, but he's not. And he can't raise his arm above his head some days. Some days he cannot comb his hair, as he told us in Baltimore. So, I mean, this is the best possible scenario to me. To me, half of a Jose Bautista is better than none of a Jose Bautista. That's what I'd rather take.
But wouldn't there be an argument to be made where you say, all right, no Jose Bautista for a little bit, and then you get all of Jose Bautista a little sooner?
I mean, I think that if it was a situation where he could take 2 weeks off and then be fine, that would probably happen. I think, like, it's not a situation where that's going to be a solution. It seems like that's not the case.
I don't think they know what's going on there with the shoulder. They're looking at it going, we don't know. Like, and Jose Bautista could feel fine some days, and then some days not at all. So I think it's just such a guessing game with what this injury is.
I mean, I would speculate, purely speculation, that they perhaps know something that they're not telling us. But that's speculation. If you were going to take your approach of shutting him down for 2 weeks and hopefully getting him right.
Oh, just a suggestion. I'm not saying that's the way to go. Just
I'm about to back you up here.
A possibility. Backing up somebody, not necessarily.
I'm about to help you out.
All right.
There is a scenario where coming up, the Blue Jays have a couple off days, kind of in. There's two Thursdays in a row where they're off, and then there's a series at Nationals Park in Washington, which is an NL ballpark where you can't have the DH anyway. So Jose Bautista would be sitting down for those 3 days. Anyway, so there's 5 days right there where you already wouldn't have had Jose Bautista. Mm. So if you put him on the 15-day DL, okay, you only miss 10 games of his production, which would be manageable, which is something that you could live with. So if it is a situation where he just needs those 2 weeks to get this thing right and get healed, that there is, you can do it coming up. There is a window coming up where it would, you could do it with like a, you know, the cost benefit analysis makes more sense of doing it then. We'll see if they do it.
Devin Travis, second baseman for the Toronto Blue Jays, overall sitting 2.71, but in the last 7 days, sitting 2.08. He's 5 for 24 with a couple of doubles and 4 runs scored, 3 RBIs. Is something wrong with Devin Travis? Is he a little more hurt than we know? What's going on with Devin Travis?
I mean, he's just cooled off, right? I mean, he wasn't going to, you know, have an OPS over 1,000 for the rest of the season. You know, it's his first year in the majors. He had a great April. I mean, he looked fantastic, and the power was kind of just out of nowhere. Nobody, even Devin Travis himself, didn't really understand where the power had come from. But I mean, you know, he's been fine in May. Like, he hasn't been as bad as people have thought he is. I mean, he just hasn't, you know, he wasn't going to hit 390 for the entire season, right? Like, no, unless he's
I thought he was
the second coming of
call Jeff an optimist, but
yeah, you know, right? Like, that wasn't going to happen. So, but you know, he's taking good at bats. He's got a good approach. He's getting deep into counts. You know, he's making hard contact. He's been hitting balls right at guys, which is just kind of correcting the fact that earlier in the year he was hitting balls where guys weren't. So, you know, those things are kind of coming back to, you know, coming home to roost, so to speak. But he's a good player. I mean, I think that if you're a Blue Jays fan, you can only be happy with what Devin Travis has given you.
Yeah, and just from a broader sense, from an offensive standpoint, looking at another bright spot, I mean, this offense has been everything in advertising and then some. They've been fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What more do you want?
I don't want any
some
more.
Good pitching.
That's
probably
enough. That's
probably
all I
some
want.
Good pitching.
Well,
that's,
I mean, from an
like
offensive standpoint, there's nothing more I want. What do you think of Josh Johnson and the year he's having so far?
Josh Johnson. Josh Donaldson.
Yeah, Josh Donaldson.
I mean, he's the best player on this team today. Yeah. Right now, in terms of Jose Bautista being banged up, Edwin Encarnacion having a slow start, Russell Martin's been pretty good, but also had that early season slump. Josh Donaldson has been, from game one to where we are right now, game 38 or whatever we're at, he has been the Blue Jays' best player. He has come as advertised. Mm-hmm. And that makes it easier to put Jose Bautista on the deal if that is something you're going to do, because you have Josh Donaldson in the lineup producing.
Do you think, Ryan, that there's been a big difference with Josh Donaldson being a Toronto Blue Jay as opposed to Brett Laurie being a Toronto Blue Jay in terms of you know, a clubhouse difference? Do you think that that's something that is, generally speaking, overblown?
I know the only acceptable answer in today's world, sports world, is that doesn't matter at all, and it's only about your talent, and that's how it will play out. I certainly got the impression from people who know more than I do about this that there, something was not fantastic in the Jays. They just didn't have a great mix, put it that way, mm-hmm. The last couple years, and it seems like that's improved. You know, is that going to be the driving force behind a team rocketing to the top of the standings? No. But wouldn't everyone prefer to have a job where the workplace is good, the work environment is better, you know? So I think it absolutely can have an impact on the team, and maybe it's not a huge one, but even a minimal one makes a difference. So yeah, it seems like they've struck a better mix in there than in recent years past.
Yeah, Arden, you're around these guys. Have you noticed a difference in the locker room, like a happier group in general?
You know, I think there's players in there that bring a different element to things. You know what I mean? Like, Russell Martin is a guy who, like, if you see him, he's working. You know what I mean? And if you don't see him, he's somewhere else working, right? he's constantly talking to his pitchers. He's constantly strategizing. Josh Donaldson is an absolute, like, video hound. Like, every time I walk in there, he's watching video. And he's helping, and you'll see him teaching technique and teaching, just kind of giving swing tips to different guys. You know, Devin Travis is a guy, hits in front of Josh Donaldson, and has told me that, like, all the time Josh is giving him advice and giving him tips and telling him what he sees and kind of, you know, different little tweaks and different ways to approach hitters. And for a guy who's in his first year in the major leagues, that's enormously helpful. Josh Donaldson, very, very smart guy. I think maybe gets a little bit underestimated for his intelligence when it comes to the game of baseball. I mean, this is a guy who really understands the swing, really understands opposing pitchers. So I think that there is just a, you know, some guys who bring a different aspect to the clubhouse this year. Mm.
Getting back to the starting pitching, is Marco Estrada is going to be gone the hill for the Toronto Blue Jays today. What are your expectations of Marco Estrada in terms of what he brings to the starting rotation?
He's been okay. I mean, he's a guy, you know what I mean? Like, he's not going to be an ace. Like, he's not going to be a number one dude. But, I mean, you know, in terms of the guy's last two times out, you know, 4 earned runs against the Yankees, 3 earned against Baltimore. I mean, that's probably about right. I mean, that's where he's going to be, you know, getting into the 5th inning, maybe hopefully, you know, getting through 6 this time. I mean, that's where the improvement, you'd like to see him get a bit deeper into games. And to be fair, the Blue Jays have been building him up because he was a reliever earlier in the year, so they don't want to give him too much too soon. You know, he's a guy who's going to kind of mess around with the 89, 90 mile an hour fastball up in the zone. And every once in a while, when you do that, you're going to miss, and that's going to get hit. That's going to happen when you throw 100 pitches. Mm. So he's going to give up a home run or two. You just hope that there's nobody on base, and that his changeup is elite. Like, his changeup is absolutely deceptive. His curveball is good when it's on. He doesn't always have it working. And he's adding a cutter right now, which he might be ready to use tonight if he feels comfortable with it. That would change a little, you know, that would just help keep hitters honest, give hitters something else to think about, might make his other stuff more effective, and might not allow them to just not key on the fastball.
Well, I wonder, though, if he presents that early, if in fact he does have it tonight, if he presents that early, or if he's going to use that maybe second, third time around.
I think he'll save
in the lineup.
He'll save it. There was an at-bat against Brett Gardner in the Yankees game 2 starts ago where Gardner, like, just fouling off fastballs, fouling off changeups, like, went 10, 11, 12 pitches, and then Estrada threw a curveball that he left up and Gardner hit it for like a double or something. And he said that would have been the perfect bat for it, to just mix in just this kind of different action and hopefully, you know, move off of the barrel of the bat, move on to the end of the bat or onto jamming a guy, depending on if he's a right or left-handed hitter, and hopefully get some weak contact. So I think that he would hang on to it because it isn't a primary pitch for him.
Well, we'll see what happens tonight with Estrada on the hill for the Toronto Blue Jays in Houston as they look to win a game in Houston. They've lost the first 2. They've got 2 remaining and 1 tonight. First pitch tonight at 7:10 in Houston. We'll have the game for you on the Sportsnet Radio Network. You can watch it on Sportsnet as well. And as we continue this hour on Sportsnet Magazine Live, a look back at the NHL in the Montreal Canadiens, who are done, obviously, in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And what's next for them? What's next for free agent to be head coach Mike Babcock? We'll talk about that and a quick look at the latest in Deflategate in the National Football League with Ryan Dixon and Arden Dwelling. I'm Jeff Sammet on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
With a taste of what's inside the current issue of Sportsnet magazine, here's Jeff Blair.
That's the walkout music of Drew Hutchison, the man in the middle of the Toronto Blue Jays rotation. It's Lynyrd Skynyrd's Saturday Night Special, a song released in 1975, which was 15 years before Hutchison was born. At 24, Hutchison is more than a decade younger than Ari Dickey and Mark Burley, but he's a veteran compared to Aaron Sanchez and the other crown jewel in the organization's pitching ranks, Daniel Norris. It is fitting, then, that Hutchison is something of an old soul. Catcher Russ Martin can close his eyes when he talks to Hutchison about pitching, and Russ Martin says it's like he's talking to a guy in his mid-30s. Hutchison, in the words of Martin, quote, just gets it. But is Hutchison ready to step up and become a front-of-the-rotation starter? He's needed this season with Marcus Stroman's injury, but there are still weaknesses in his game. The good news is Hutchison's prepared for this, just as he was prepared to be a major league pitcher, even though he sometimes thought he was being overlooked as a high schooler in Lakeland, Florida, who is surrounded on a daily basis by future first-round draft picks. You underestimate Drew Hutchison at your own risk, as the Blue Jays found out when they tried to play hardball with him out of the draft. Drew Hutchison is definitely somebody worth getting to know. I wouldn't tell you
no lies. That story and more can be found in the latest issue of Sportsnet Magazine, available on Next Issue, or by downloading the Sportsnet Magazine app for Apple, Android, and Windows tablets and phones.
It's 11:36, Sportsnet Magazine Live with Arden Dwelling and Ryan Dixon. I'm Jeff Sammet on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Going to talk about the Montreal Canadiens, of course, eliminated from the Stanley Cup playoffs, what their future is going to be like this offseason, and a little more on free agent head coach to be Mike Babcock, whose contract runs out at the end of June, but a decision has to be made soon per the Red Wings' request as far as where Babcock is going to go, if it's Detroit or otherwise. We'll talk about that in a few moments, but just quickly on Deflategate. It's one of the stories of the week. It's a story that's not going to go away, folks. It's going to be around for a little while. And the latest, of course, is that Tom Brady's been suspended for 4 games, and they're looking to they are appealing it. And he's going to be speaking with Commissioner Roger Goodell. Now, guys, the NFLPA, they're saying to Goodell, hey, could you get an arbitrator? Could you not be the guy that's going to, you know, decide here? And, you know, let's get an arbitrator here. And now Goodell's kind of looking at it going, well, I kind of want to hear what Tom Brady has to say. And the NFL feeling that Goodell's influence is going to allow people or force people to be a little bit more forthcoming and to get to the bottom of everything that's going on here. I guess this whole story still goes back to the conversation of 4-game suspension. Was that fair or foul for Tom Brady? Ryan, did you look back on it and say 4 games for Tom Brady for Deflategate? Really? That's too much. Or that's about what I thought.
Obviously, he's paying a bit for the organization's transgressions in the past with the spying.
Spygate, another gate.
Yes. There's earlier nothing on. That isn't a gate.
And then, of course, the Patriots' involvement back in the 70s with Watergate. I mean, they're paying for that as well.
So I think, yes, he bore a little bit of the brunt of that. And, you know, people don't respond well to the Patriots' arrogance a little bit. Like, they weren't even going to lower themselves to have to offer an explanation or whatever when this was originally breaking. So I think the assumption was all along that he's going to get somewhere in that neighborhood, appeal, it's going to get lopped in half and go about your day. But something was going to come of this after that report came out with the Patriots pass. And I feel like as a starting point, really 4 games was probably within the realm of what was acceptable.
What do you think Tom Brady says to Roger Goodell? I mean, Arden, do you think he goes to him and goes, come on. We're all doing it. Raj, seriously. What's he going to say? If he had anything to say, he would have said it to this point, to defend himself if he were innocent.
Yeah, I don't know. He didn't hand over his phone, right? That was the big thing.
No.
Yeah. Man, I don't know. Like, who could sit here and act like every team, not even just in the NFL, but every team in professional sports isn't doing what they can to get an edge, right? Isn't doing every little thing they can inside or outside the lines.
So you're in the cheating is acceptable.
I'm not saying it's acceptable. I'm saying if you aren't cheating, you aren't trying, right? I mean, everyone's doing it. So, like, you know, and I get that they're, like, people take this weird, like, pleasure in punishing the Patriots and seeing them suffer for whatever reason, just because they're really good at football. Like, I don't know. I don't
understand.
And
smug.
They're smug.
So what?
They're smug.
They're really good. They can back it up. They're so good at football.
And they've cheated in the past.
They've won many championships. You know what I mean?
Like, well, you're talking to a Giants fan. They've got nothing on us.
Dude, the Colts got blown out in that game, right? The game that kind of tipped the scales on this, the Colts got crushed. I don't care if they were playing with beach balls. The Colts got dummied.
But it's the thing, though. If the Patriots are cheating, why them of all teams? Like, I've said it in the past, if it's a Cleveland Browns, you go, yeah, just, you know what, let's look the other way on that because the Browns need all the help they can get. You know, but it's the New England Patriots. They don't need to do this. That's the thing. They don't need
Maybe it's what the whole empire is built on.
I just think that every team is doing what it can to get by. So I just don't get that outraged by it. And I can totally see the justification for it, too. We wanted to win, so we did what we had to do to get by.
Oh,
you see players on the...
Mr. Commissioner, clearly we wanted to win. That's true. That's an excellent point. You know what? 2 games. We're going to give them just 2 games.
Right? You see players, like, within the lines, you know, doing, you know, taking little cheap shots or doing what they can to bend the rules or to, like, do things behind the referee's back. And it's like, oh, what a shrewd, you know, maneuver that was. Like, how smart is that player, right? It's really got a great, you know, sense of what's happening on the field, this and that. And I mean, but so, and then, you know, you get caught and everyone wants to jump all over them. I don't see how you can, you know, both celebrate this stuff and also, you
well,
know,
I don't celebrate
admonish it.
I'm a goody two-shoes. You know? I don't celebrate it. I like this side of Arden. I feel like
his dark side comes out.
I feel like he's got something
afternoon
on me.
Yeah. like what everyone gets upset about and is that, like, when's the last time the NFL handled a disciplinary issue and satisfied people with their handling of it?
Well, they don't have a great track record recently, that's for sure.
Yeah. Arden's also wearing an all-black hoodie.
It's true.
Like, he looks like he just robbed somebody and came in here.
It's true. I may have.
Which I'm not ruling out completely.
As long as he shares what he got, we're okay.
All right. So Deflategate, that's going to continue. The Montreal Canadiens this offseason, Ryan, and I got to give you props. I mentioned this earlier on in the show, but I got to do it again. Earlier on in the year, when the Montreal Canadiens were going very, very well, you know, you were saying to I'm paraphrasing, but you're saying that this team is not as good as you think. And here we are. The Carey Price took them as far as they could, but they clearly have deficiencies, and that's something that was talked about as Mark Bergevin addressed the media yesterday.
Yes, not to deflect your praise, but I certainly wasn't alone in saying that, you know, there might be some troubles with Montreal. They're just at an interesting spot because I think, you know, when you watch the Canadiens, so they played 12 playoff games, they won 6, they lost 6. Basically tells you everything you need to know. Like, they second round, 6-game series, that's about as far as they should have gone. And they're just in that tricky territory where they're trying to go from pretty good to really good and actually being able to contend for a Stanley Cup and win 4 playoff series. And of course, they have some great pillars. They have a very good goalie. They have a really good defenseman in Subban. And some other pieces. Max Pacioretty has become a very good, well-rounded player, but there are still obvious holes. And, you know, the Canadians have had a hole at center forever. And that's where we got into some interesting territory. You never know exactly how much weight to put into what a man in front of a podium is saying at the end of the year, but Mark Bergevin really kind of backed away from the idea that Alex Galchenyuk, who's now completed 3 years in the NHL, would be moved to center. Everyone had sort of long assumed this was happening and had even questioned why it hadn't really happened yet. It seemed like a natural. That's where he played most of his junior career, and that's the Canadiens' greatest need. Why not groom this kid? But Bergevin certainly wasn't speaking like that was an inevitability, mostly putting it on, and perhaps fairly, that, you know, Galchenyuk hasn't shown that he's ready yet. But at the same time, you know, you wonder if the only way for him to show he can is to, you know, get 40 games there. So if they're not going to do that, if it's not Galchenyuk, then the question becomes, you know, who's it going to be? And are they going to go outside the organization and try and find a person? You know, Bergevin certainly poured a lot of cold water on that, again, saying, well, I guess what you'd expect, that, you know, as we all know, these guys don't grow on trees, and no one thinks that Mark Bergevin is going to go out there and trade for Ryan Getzlaf. I think we all understand that. However, you know, if you just look in the recent past, it's not like impact centers, and if you blow it out further, impact forwards don't ever move, you know? Circumstances are all different, for sure, but we've seen Tyler Seguin 2 years ago go to Dallas. Jason Spezza go also to Dallas. Ryan Kesler go to the Ducks, you know? Yes, again, these are different circumstances, but the point is, these players come up. And if you're the Canadians at this point, you know, they've got a pretty well entrenched problem in terms of not being able to score enough. And we could have a whole other discussion about whether that has to do with coaching. And some people would tell you it does. And, you know, the power play needs to be rejigged. But they don't have the horses. I think in really basic terms, they just don't have the horses just yet.
And Bergevin said Therrien's coming back. Like,
that was never happening.
And everybody's in the same boat, Ryan, as far as adding to their club. Maybe not so much in the free agency standpoint. You got to do it via the trade.
That's right. So you got to go out there and find the next situation where a big guy might move. So you start looking around the league and you think, okay, you know, have the San Jose Sharks done everything possible to alienate Joe Thornton? Yes, they have.
Yeah.
So maybe there's a guy who, you know, there's always contingencies and, you know, no movement this and salary cap that, and you've got to work a little magic to make it happen. But hey, maybe there's a guy you can go out there and get at the end of his career, maybe for 50 cents on the dollar a little bit, because he is 35, but he, you know, still has some tread on the tire, I would suspect. And, you know, if the Toronto Maple Leafs weren't Montreal's blood rival, you'd wonder if the Canadians were the first team calling about someone like Phil Kessel, who the Canadians have their leadership core. They have their core players, their dressing room presence. What they need is talent. And a guy like that who falls out of bed and scores 37 goals in a decent situation, you know, that is precisely the kind of player Montreal, I think, is at a point where, I mean, even speaking as a somewhat conservative armchair GM here, I would say you get to a tipping point where you do have to kind of swallow hard and say, we don't really want to trade our second best prospect and our first round pick next year. But we need a thrust. We need a boost. We need an element that only comes via adding it from somewhere else. And I you know, I think Montreal has shown it's at that spot. I crunched some numbers on their past 18 playoff games. So they're going back to last year losing in the conference final with the Rangers. 18 games, pretty decent sample size. They've only, out of those 18 games, three times did they score more than two goals in regulation. You know, that's just not going to get it done. So hey, you've got Carey Price at a fantastic cap hit of about 6.5 for a couple more years. You've got Max Pacioretty at an absurdly low criminal cap hit of about 4.5. You know, these guys are still relatively young, but I think you might want to try and move things along here and see where you can get.
Very quickly, what about Malkin out in Pittsburgh?
I just don't think the Penguins are going to trade up getting Malkin. I mean, sure, he fits, aside from his injury troubles, he certainly fits the description to a T of what Montreal would be looking for. That is one guy I do not see him moving.
Let's talk about Mike Babcock briefly before we say goodbye on Sportsnet Magazine Live. And go around the room a little bit. Orton Zwelling, where do you believe Mike Babcock ends up? Is it back in Detroit? Is it somewhere else?
I couldn't tell. I don't know where he'd end up, to be honest with you. I mean, I don't think money's going to be an issue wherever he goes, right? So
someone's going to pay him.
He's in a very enviable position as a dude, because he can just kind of like pick and choose the situation that works best for him. Maybe more importantly, the people he wants to work with the most. Yes. You know, just the relationships within an organization, between a coach, between his assistants, between those above him, the general manager, you know, the scouting department, the hockey staff, this and that. I mean, those relationships are very important. So I think that more so, you know, everyone makes a big deal of, you know, oh, this is a tough media market, or, you know, this is a tough, you know, this place sucks to live, or this or that. Like, I mean, this is a guy who's, you know, worked in Detroit for, you know, the last few years, right? So you talk about, you know, not nice places to live.
Plush suburbs, though.
You also talk about nice places to work and good people to work with, and, you know, winners and people with similar goals and philosophies. I think they'll come down to that, who he wants to work with.
That's interesting. And you know, that brings up the example of the Philadelphia Flyers, who can certainly pay Babcock, but would he want to work with a GM that hasn't been around very long in Ron Hextall?
And in a place where, you know, Ed Snyder at the top of the food chain there, you know, big things, for better or worse, big things seem to happen, and there's some volatility in Philly is what I'm attempting to say. I don't, even from a hockey standpoint, I just don't see that one as the best fit. I mean, there's some pieces in Philly for sure, but I would think he'd be more apt to go somewhere that's worse now, but has more long-term potential, like Buffalo. I think it's been 51% Detroit all along. I'll stand by that and say, at the end of all this talking, Mike Babcock probably ends up coaching the Red Wings, who legitimately look now like maybe they can get back on the upswing. They've established some good young guys with Tatar and Nyquist. Mrazek, we'll see, and they've got a guy like Dylan Larkin coming. No, they don't have a McDavid or an Eichel, but they might be able to turn this corner without ever really falling off the cliff.
Yeah, well, and they've been able to draft well, obviously, and scouted very well, too. And there's something to be said for his family and his family being comfortable in Detroit and wanting to be in Detroit, and that's going to weigh heavily on his decision. Very quickly, though, the Toronto Maple Leafs as a possibility. Without a GM right now. I mean, if Babcock's looking for a place to work, aside from all the stuff that comes with the Toronto Maple Leafs and the media and the fans or whatever, the city, the market, but if you're going to a place where I don't know clearly who my boss is going to be, I'm not sure he'd want to go there.
I don't think so. Yeah, that one seems to have fallen off the map completely.
Yeah, I don't think that's happening.
Yeah, I mean, but I mean, do you want a bigger challenge?
That would be a big challenge.
To be the guy, right, who brought the Maple Leafs back to relevance and to prevalence. You know what I mean? This historic franchise that, you know, used to be one of the greatest in hockey and is now one of the worst. I mean, to be the guy who turned that around with Brendan Shanahan, I think would be appealing at least. But I think that, you know, like I said, it's relationships. It's who he wants to work with, because that's what we all wish we could choose.
Yeah,
we wish we could choose the people we work with.
Oh, sure. Of course, you know, we do.
I would choose to work with you guys.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah.
And on a touchy feeling.
Yeah. Well, and just to kind of turn it on its ear, I would do this again next week, but I'm not going to. Thanks for this, guys. Appreciate Ryan Dixon, Orton Zwelling. Thanks, guys, for coming in. Appreciate it. It was a fun morning. So thanks a lot for spending the last couple of hours here on Sportsnet Magazine Live, and we thank you as well. for listening. Arden and Ryan are going to go enjoy the rest of a beautiful day here in Toronto. I'm going to stick around for a little bit longer. Going to have a half-hour edition of Sportsnet today. Mike Wilner is going to join us and preview the Blue Jays and Houston Astros, the 7:10 first pitch on the Sportsnet Radio Network. You can watch it on Sportsnet as well. But I'll kick off the noon half hour with Sportsnet's Chris Johnston, who's covering Tampa Bay and the Rangers, that Eastern Conference final, the Stanley Cup playoffs. That's a game we're going to have for you here on the Sportsnet Radio Network as well, with a 12:30 pregame and a 1 o'clock puck drop. And CJ is going to join us to preview that game. I'm Jeff Sammet. This has been Sportsnet Magazine Live. We'll kick off Sportsnet today on the Sportsnet Radio Network.